you can build an impressive short-term rental business from the ground up with a little help from John and Jeanette. These successful Airbnb and Vrbo hosts have experienced and documented the blood, sweat, and tears it can take to really stand out from the pack.
Welcome to Stand Out.
Hey everybody, it's John.
And Jeanette.
And welcome to Stand Out Hosting. Today is kind of a milestone for us and all of our listeners because we've really taken this through the whole process of selecting your STR, where it should be, your location, how to furnish it, how to decorate it, cleaners, everything, all the way through the welcome book in the last episode. So today we really transitioned, Jeanette, more into that. We're running an Airbnb, VRBO, short-term rental property, and what's it like? What do we need to know? What do we need to be doing? And we're going to do that today in a format where we're just going to kind of rapid fire through 6, 7, 8 questions that we get a lot or see a lot, and we're going to address them, and we'll just kind of see how this evolves into our new, you know, current actually running an STR versus getting an STR going, which is kind of where we've been up until now.
So now that you're running your STR that stands out and you're dealing with real guests, real people, real situations, probably some questions are going to pop up. And we have a few of them that we're going to go over today, things that we've experienced. And we'll just tell you our opinions and how we've dealt with them. And hopefully it will help you.
Yeah, some of these are questions that have been made to us or that we picked up on as we track Facebook groups and things like that that cover STRs. And that's kind of the collection of today's questions.
Yeah, so let's just start with question number one. Should I bump my prices up at certain times of the year?
The short answer to that is, of course, yes. There are times of the year where having your pricing shift upwards or down, maybe in some cases, makes total sense. And the first couple ones that just jumped to my mind, and then Jeanette, I'll let you sort of add some of your thoughts. But, you know, holidays, not to be the Grinch, but Christmas, Thanksgiving, New Year's for sure, if you're in the right location, things like that. Those are events that command a higher price per night. I think it's fair to do that. And by the way, it's not me and Jeanette dreaming this up. The hotel business has done this for, you know, hundreds of years. If you're approaching Christmas, Thanksgiving, New Year's, 4th of July, Easter, all of those holidays that tend to bring people into town to stay with family or celebrate out or whatever they're doing, that would definitely be a time to consider bumping your prices up.
Yeah, like in our neighborhood, in our area, we have certain festivals like the Azalea Festival, or maybe there's a big concert. Those are going to bring in more money on those weekends. So the prices will be a little bit higher then. Also, you know, VRBO, Airbnb, those are the ones we use. They usually will kind of recommend that you raise your prices sometimes or lower them sometimes. They have all these algorithms that kind of determine what people are looking for and what they're willing to spend. And they'll give you some advice. But you know your area better than they do. So, you know, go with your gut, look at and see what your competition is doing. And if you're, you know, $200 under your competition, you know, you may want to raise your prices.
Yeah, and I think that, you know, what is your STR? At the end of the day, what is it worth per night is really limited only by what is somebody willing to pay you for it. So sometimes it's a lesson in patience. If you got the 4th of July and it's 6 months out and you jack your price up to $750 a night, which we've done, you know, you may not get feedback within the next week. You know, people aren't maybe booking that far out. And then you start panicking, you start lowering it, and now you're back where you used to be or even lower. You've got to be patient. I know that for us, we have a tendency to keep our price pretty steady and pretty high. But if we end up with a, you know, we're a week or two out from a period where we don't have very many bookings, at that point, we might go ahead and lower some pricing, you know, take it down $100 a night or something to, you know, try to get somebody that was just going to stay in the hotel next door or whatever to switch over to us. And, you know, $550 a night isn't as good as $650 a night, but $550 a night is better than zero a night any day of the week.
I agree. I think, you know, we definitely want to make sure our guests feel like they're getting value for their money too. So, and we always, you know, if they're paying extra, we tend to do a little extra too to make sure they know that they're getting good value for the higher prices. So for example, 4th of July, you know, I'll have, you know, 4th of July plates and cups and, you know, maybe some extra drinks and, you know, snacks, and just make it kind of a festive, fun thing. and just make them feel like they're not getting ripped off. Speaking of value, another question that we've considered and also we've been asked is, you know, should we allow one-night stays?
Yeah, and I call them one-night stands, but it is just not in our wheelhouse for the experience that we deliver. It's not enough time for them to experience the true Airbnb Vrbo experience that we're trying to create. And let me explain that. So just walk through a day in the life of somebody renting one night with our houseboat. Okay, they check in at 4 o'clock in the afternoon, usually. They see the houseboat. This is really cool. Love it. They check in. They put their stuff down. They hang some stuff in the thing. It's time to go eat dinner. They come home. It's already kind of dark. Right about then, they're getting a reminder from us for the checkout in the morning. So that's always kind of a bummer on your vacation to get that the thing slipped under your hotel room, or in our case, an Airbnb notification. It's time to move out tomorrow. And then they're up cleaning a little bit, putting the garbage away and throwing the dishes in the dishwasher, and they're out by 10 a.m. What was their experience? They might as well stayed at a hotel at that point. So that's really what drives my passion for, you know, I know you think you want to stay one night for, let's just say, an average night of $600 a night on average, plus cleaning fee, by the way, of $200 and some other fees from Airbnb and Vrbo. So now you're in the $850, $900 range for one night. I mean, we better have quite the experience. I better have U2 or Aerosmith playing out on the platform next to them, right, for that kind of take. But when you look at it over two nights or more, cleaning fee gets kind of spread out across that whole time. They have that whole day up on the deck watching boats come and go and the ferries go and seaplanes and hear the birds and all that kind of stuff. Maybe have lunch somewhere, come back, have a siesta back on the deck. You know, now you got an experience, and that's what they remember, not I was packing to go the moment I arrived.
Yeah, it's not a hotel room, right? So it's not just a bed and a bathroom. It's a place to hang out and have fun and maybe share a meal or, you know, cocktails. If a hotel, it's not a big deal because you're spending most of your time outside of the room. But here, you know, you're providing an experience. And so you can't really experience much in less than 24 hours. So it doesn't really work for us. And you really, you have to lower your price quite a bit to make that even palatable to somebody looking for a one-night stay. But sometimes there are things that happen that make people want, they don't care. They don't care about the price. And it might be a big concert, which we have a concert venue close to us. So big concerts, people just spend and they don't care. So I guess in those cases, that might work, but for us, not so much.
I'll remind you all, and you'll hear more about this, but the Dockside is located in the Cove community in Wilmington. The Cove is a collection of about 40 houseboats. Many of those houseboats do offer one night stays for folks. So if you want to stay one night, there are houseboats in there. They're lower price per night, maybe a little bit lower cleaning fee. They offer one night stay. And honestly, I've heard stories of people that don't check in till 10, 11 o'clock at night, and they're out the next morning at 6 a.m. to catch a flight or go to the trade show at the convention center or whatever they're doing. For me, it's a head scratcher. We are offering more of an experience with everything that goes with that. But there are times where a one-night stay probably makes sense for some people. And there are houseboats in our community that do offer that.
So here's a big one. This comes up a lot, and we've had to deal with it ourselves. What are your thoughts on pets?
So that's easy. We love pets. I love dogs. I love cats. I don't love them in the houseboat.
I would agree with that. We don't have dogs ourselves, and so that may be part of our choice not to allow dogs, but we also have family members that have severe allergies, and so we're sensitive to that. And we just know that with pets comes more damage, more wear and tear, and we are in a houseboat. It's a smaller type facility. You know, if it was a big old house, you know, with lots of land, it would make more sense to allow pets. But for our particular situation, we have said no pets, and we have no regrets there.
So I tend to look at this like as a math problem. So if you are going to open your home, your STR, to animals, I guarantee you will, in fact, open up a little bit broader audience. You'll probably pick up, you know, what, another 20-30% of an audience that wants to stay in a place with pets. Now, you might turn off 10%. So net-net, you might only be picking up 10 or 15% more of an audience because some people may not want to stay in a place that allows pets. Just like people don't like to stay in a place that allows smoking. It's kind of the same if you have a severe allergy. But however, if the other side of that math piece is you've got to plan on that it's going to cost you money. Eventually, it's going to cost you money. Maybe not the first dog, maybe not the first cat. It's going to cost you money in the long run because pets can do stuff to your place, right?
Yeah, you want to really think about, okay, if something happens, the sofa gets ripped or bedding gets ruined or the curtains get chewed or ripped, what are you going to do? You got to be able to quickly replace those items. And you have to consider what is it going to cost you to clean it? So you want to talk to your cleaning crew and find out what are they going to charge you if they have to spend an extra hour cleaning things up or, you know, stain removal and things like that. And have a procedure in place. You know, your cleaning crew should know, okay, I see a problem. I'm going to take a picture, upload it to the owner right away, and then have a plan to fix it. Because you may have a guest coming the next day and you have to have it ready. You know, people do this all the time. There's ways to make this work, but just make sure you have a plan.
Well, you need a plan and procedure, but you also, in your listing, it better say right along, we happily allow dogs under 50 pounds. I'm just making up whatever your policy is. But if they damage something, pee on the couch, whatever, you should expect a fee. And that you really should have that in there, number one, because when it does happen, and it will, that you have, there's no mathematics, no, you know, bid going out to some cleaning service. It's just, hey, if your dog damages something, it's $250. End of story. And they know it going in. And when you send the picture of the stain on the couch, they get it and they write the check.
Yeah, I mean, they're pet owners. They know what, you know, that these things can happen. I will say I've looked at some of the comments that people have made on this subject, and some have suggested that you actually get references for their pets, people that will speak about their good behavior, say, and even videos of the pets and how they interact. And people do that. And if the pet owner is really serious about bringing their pets, they will provide you that information. And it's not unusual or crazy to ask for that because, you know, you want to protect your assets. And you want to keep it nice for the next guest.
Or you do what we do and say, sorry, yeah, no pets.
Much easier that way. John, talk about what you do when we have a guest that maybe wasn't the best.
Yeah, well, so first of all, in general, we don't review, even if we think everything went great, we don't review our guest until the cleaners at least have been there. And we wait for that, hey, these guys were awesome, they were amazing, or here's the photograph of all the pot residue that they left behind, right? Or whatever in between. First thing is we just don't go on good vibes and review them well, only to show up that they didn't really do a good job. And then what do then, right? If I think there's any risk at all to your question about, I just don't know, this doesn't feel like it's going to be a guaranteed five. They didn't sign the guest book. They haven't communicated, or if they did communicate, it was sort of nitpicky, you know, ideas you guys should know about trying to make this place better or whatever. In those instances, I don't review them until I saw that they reviewed us. And here's why. The moment you review your guest, Airbnb or Vrbo begins pestering them. Hey, you've been reviewed. Review them back. Review them back. They said something about you. You better say something about them. So if you're not sure you're going to get a good one, and they didn't do the guest book anyway, and they didn't, you know, have any communications, they're probably just one of those people that aren't going to review you. That's okay. Because you start bugging them to review you, you may not get the 5-0 that we think is so important that you get.
This just happened to us with one of our recent guests, so I think it's worth talking about. So what happens when the guest checking into your property was not the person that you were communicating with through the platform? So you get a call like we did saying, hey, how do I get in? What do I do? Where do I go? Can I have a map? In our case, well, it was his son who got all the communications and he had a last minute thing come up with work and he couldn't come. So his dad went by himself, but he didn't have any of the information.
Yeah, that's a tough one. Here's the danger here. You obviously aren't going to tell the dad you can't stay. It has to be your son. Although I will tell you that many hosts have some sort of a note in their listing that the person listing needs to be person staying there, because you obviously don't want, for example, mom and dad booking it for their 14-year-old boys for this birthday party or something. So there is some watch outs here to just keep in mind. This was on the up and up. The son, air quotes, the son of this guy that was the one we were communicating with was in his late 20s, it appeared, based on his younger brother being in college and things like that. So the other watch out is, yes, it's okay to have him come, but you've got to do everything twice. Because if you remember, one of our rules that we live by is, and is expected on the platforms that you do live by this, is all communication should be through the platform. So Jeanette was texting the dad, and I was alerting what turned out to be the son on the platform with every communication word for word the same. Because this is, as you recall, this is where stuff can go bad, where people start saying, hey, I found a spider, I want all my money back, or hey, if you don't give me my money back for no reason, but if you don't give me my money back, I'm going to give you a bad review.
Yeah, I mean, it protects you, but it also protects your guests. So it's just a good procedure to follow. And in this case, you know, we just had to make sure that we also communicated with the father via text so that he would get all the information that his son was getting through the platform. And so that he knew what to do. He knew where to go. He knew what the checkout procedure was, and we could still have communication. It's so important to maintain communication with your guests and that they have a way to contact you if anything comes up.
Now, the moral of that story was, it was great. He was a great guest. The dad was probably in his, late 40s, early 50s. I still say there's a red flag, though, when people do this to you. I don't want to just sugarcoat this because, again, either an older brother doing the 13-year-old boy's birthday party, or you've got a 60-year-old that has set it up for their 85-year-old parents, and the 60-year-old can't make it. You're now dealing, no offense, but you're dealing with 85-year-old parents that aren't super tech savvy, trying to deal with an Airbnb and self-check-in, self-check-out, all that kind of stuff, lock boxes that are digital. You know, have your guard up and have your red flag up when this happens.
Yeah, and I think you're protected as well. So if, for example, if a mom sets up a bachelor party, say, for her son or something, and so she's not there and it's just all him and his buddies, you know, you figure out what's going on, you can cancel that reservation and you shouldn't get penalized for that because they've gone outside of the platform and not followed the rules. So just, follow your gut. If it doesn't seem right, if it doesn't feel right, don't ignore that and you should be okay. This next question is really a question for John. This is his area of expertise, but it's an important one. So here's the question. What are the best ways to promote my STR?
Oh, yeah. We hear this one a lot. And frankly, we have not done the marketing podcast yet. And that's probably on me. That's going to be a two-parter and it's going to take some time. But I think it's a great question and we should go ahead and hit it at the highest level here. Usually what folks in their mind immediately go to, Jeanette, is, hey, I'm going to make business cards, I'm going to make a website, and everybody's going to beat a path to my door. I just want everyone to consider the fact that there are things that you create that are resources that help once somebody comes to you. And then there's a whole nother group of things that are meant to attract people that don't even know you exist. So websites a little bit in between those two, but certainly on the business card side, you can go to Moo. I think we have talked about a little bit of this, but you can go to moo.com, have some beautiful business cards made. You'll look super professional and you'll give them all to your friends and family who already know you have this STR. The business card only helps you gain more business once people have stayed with you and maybe take a business card home out of your welcome book to show their friends, hey, you got to stay here, that kind of stuff. The website, if you do it right, is a great secondary promotional tool beyond the platforms, because what we found is we can drive people to our website for our houseboat, then have links that go right to our listing on Airbnb and Vrbo. So instead of saying, go to Airbnb or Vrbo and search me out, and they see 100 different properties that distract them, they go right to my property and make the decision whether they're going to rent from me or not. We use social media in a very similar way. We have a page around the property with the 2,500 people that follow it. So basically for free, every 3 or 4 days, I can post a picture or saying or a meme or video or whatever we want to do. And I get to talk to 2,500 people. It's like talking to the entire population of like a large high school in Texas. Suddenly get this news from you about a new offering or a new furniture, or you got a new record player, or there's certain dates coming up that are available or whatever. And it costs you zero pennies.
Well, how hard is it to set up a website for somebody like me? Like, you know how to do it. I don't. So is it expensive to set up?
Well, it's changed a lot. It used to be expensive to do any of this stuff. But I mean, you can get a domain. Let's say your mountain house is in Aspen and you're going to be the aspenhut.com. And I doubt that's available, but whatever. You find some name. You're the aspenhut.com. That's going to cost you like $20 a year. Okay. That's it for that. That's just for the domain. Then using for a novice, using something like Wix or even some tools, maybe if you got your domain through GoDaddy or HostGator or somebody like that, they'll even a lot of times have web templates that you just kind of fill in the facts and it kind of puts up a okay website for you right away. And again, then the main thing there is you got a button that clicks right to your page on Airbnb or Vrbo. And you've cut all the middlemen out, not the platforms and their fees, but you've cut out all that competition on those platforms. So when you talk about your property, instead of saying, go find me on Airbnb, here's this massively long number, you just say, hey, Jim, go to aspenhut.com. That's my property. I know you got to run, and you can go right to my property from there. That's just a logical chain of heard about your property, went to your website, went right to the site, booked your site, and done. Not go find me in Tulum, Mexico. I'm on there. They're going to have to look at 1,000 properties and wonder which one's yours.
All right, here's a question for you. Should I charge early or late checkout fees?
Well, we haven't yet. However, some of my fellow renters in my area, they definitely do charge for an early check-in or late checkout. We tend to be pretty heavy weekend traffic, not always. Summer is kind of every day of the week. So if a guest is checking out on a Monday and wants to stay late, we check the cleaning schedule to make sure that we're clear there. And if no one's coming for, 3 or 4 days, absolutely. We use it as a surprise and delight over the top. Hey, we'll see what we can do. We never just instantly say yes. We always say, let me see what's possible. Come back. Hey, what if you checked out at 2? Would that be good for you? Set a 10. They love it. They love us. The review just clicks up. If there's 6 stars, you would get that. And it cost us nothing. The cleaners usually aren't coming till the next day anyway. So that's how we do it. Again, if you go all the way back to the question, Jeanette, you asked about one-night stays, I think if you had a one-night stay and they asked for that and, they're only out of pocket $300, $400, $500, I'd probably want to charge them another $50, $75 for staying, another half a day. It's almost extending the stay by, 60%.
Yeah, what I would say is I absolutely love it when we can allow people to check in early or check out late. Because, for us, it's all about having, them having a good time, being relaxed and on vacation and feeling pampered and special. So that makes me happy if we can make that happen. I will say one time when we might charge is if, say, they're supposed to be out by 10 a.m. And the cleaners show up at, say, 10:30 or 11 and they're still there, then they have to wait for the guests to check out. Well, now we're going to get charged by the cleaners because, they're wasting their time. So in that case, you might want to charge a fee, and I think they would understand that.
Yeah, that's a great point. And, that's not the only time you probably need to charge your guests for stuff that they did or didn't do. We'll need to talk about those and a lot more questions that we have in a later podcast.
Yeah, and if y'all have any questions that you want us to address, just do a shout out to us on our Standout Hosting Facebook page, and we'll see if we can get to them. If we don't have the answers, we will find the answers, and we will share them with you.
So thanks again for listening to Standout Hosting. I'm John.
I'm Jeanette.
And we'll see you next time. Hey guys, it's John.
And Jeanette.
And we wanted to let you guys know that the Dockside Houseboat that you've heard so much about for so many episodes here on the podcast is now part of the Cove Wilmington, which is a beautiful 40 houseboat community located right on the Cape Fear River in historic downtown Wilmington.
check it out at covewilmington.com.